I think we are sending the strongest possible message about our rejection of coercion and our rejection of authoritarianism.
Australia hosts meetings to counter Beijing. It's Thursday, February 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the latest medal count for the Winter Olympic Games, counterterrorism in Indonesia, lifting mask mandates in the United States, mapping supply chain breakdowns, and a threat to the koala in Australia. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in the Australian city of Melbourne as part of a three-day visit to the country. The top U.S. diplomat says the trip highlights the Biden administration's focus on the Asia-Pacific and Indo-Pacific regions. Blinken is due to meet with Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne, as well as their Indian and Japanese counterparts who form the so-called Quad. The meetings come just one day after Payne met with Lithuania's Foreign Minister Gabrielius Landsbergis to form a united front against Beijing's economic coercion. Here's Maurice Payne.
I think we are sending the strongest possible message about our rejection of coercion and our rejection of authoritarianism.
Lithuanian Foreign Minister Gabrielius Landsbergis also spoke to reporters.
And I think we need to remind countries like China or any other country that would wish to use trade as a weapon, that the like-minded countries across the globe, that they have tools, that they have tools and regulations that help withstand the coercion and not to give in into political and economic pressures.
I absolutely agree with Gabrielius in relation to the importance of like-minded nations who are interested in the operation of the international rules-based order, who are interested in free and open trade, who are interested in openness and transparency, in security and stability, working together and being consistent in our approach on these issues.
For his part, Blinken's visit to Australia is his first since an enhanced trilateral security partnership with Australia and Britain was established. It's known as AUKUS and was announced last September. The agreement includes a deal to build nuclear-propelled submarines for Australia as part of an enhanced deterrence against China's military expansion across the Indo-Pacific region. In Beijing, Chinese officials have expressed wariness over the Quad and AUKUS, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian on Wednesday.
Democracy is a value shared by all mankind, not a patent claimed by a few countries. Whether a country is democratic or not can only be judged by its people. The image of the U.S. as the apotheosis of democracy has already collapsed. The United States forces other countries to accept American democratic standards, draws lines based on democratic values, and cobble together small groups. This is a complete betrayal of democracy. China is a boon to the regional order. China pursues peace, development, and cooperation, and promotes the building of an equal, open, and inclusive security system in the Asia-Pacific region that is not targeted at any third country.
Zhao made the remarks after U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken came to Australia for Quad ministerial meetings among the U.S., Japan, India, and Australia, which are partly going to focus on discussions about challenges that China poses to U.S. democratic values and rules-based order in a number of sectors. We invite you to read much more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. North Korea boasts of shaking the world by testing missiles. Movement to lower Taiwan's voting age gains momentum. Indonesia bus crash kills 13, injures dozens. China, Pakistan renew call to unfreeze Afghan cash reserves. How China got blue skies in time for the Olympics. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. At the Beijing Olympics heading into competition today, Germany leads the medals table with 5 gold medals and 3 silver. Norway is currently second in the official table ranked by gold medals. They have 4 along with 2 silver and 4 bronze. Host country China has moved down to 5th place with 3 gold and 2 silver medals. Russian athletes collected the most medals so far with 11. The United States has now moved up to 11th place with its first gold medal, 5 silver medals and 1 bronze. VOA's Chris Cascajo has the latest wrap-up of the 2022 Winter Olympic Games in Beijing.
The first gold medal for the U.S. in Beijing went to a 5-time Olympian. 16 years after a premature celebration cost her gold, American Lindsay Jacob Ellis finally erased that memory with her win in women's snowboard cross. Korean-American Chloe Kim, the defending gold medalist in women's halfpipe, easily qualified for the event finals. American Sean White, a 3-time gold winner, will compete for a medal in men's halfpipe in his 5th and final Olympics. American-born Eileen Gu, representing China, won't compete again until Sunday, but she continues to face questions about her citizenship. On Tuesday, she did not answer whether she was still holding an American passport. China does not allow dual nationality. Gu said, "I feel just as American as Chinese. I don't feel I'm taking advantage of one or another. They understand that my mission is to foster a connection between countries and not a divisive force." Chinese-American U.S. men's figure skater Nathan Chen holds a significant lead over Japan's Yuma Kageyama and Shoma Uno, going into Thursday's free skate. Wednesday's gold medal winners, Slovakia in women's slalom alpine skiing, Norway in men's freestyle big air skiing, Germany in men's doubles luge and in Nordic combined, and South Korea in men's 1500-meter short track speed skating. Chris Cascajo, VOA News, Washington.
Follow all of the latest Olympic news with us at voanews.com. The United States has leveled financial sanctions against an Indonesian humanitarian organization for supporting an active terror group. The sanctions center around a charitable organization called World Human Care. The U.S. Treasury Department describes the group as a front to raise money to back Southeast Asian fighters in Syria through the extremist group MMI, Majelis Mujahideen Indonesia. Vidya Ramalingam is the founder and CEO of Moonshot, which innovates technology solutions to redirect those susceptible to online radicalization efforts. She says her research in Indonesia shows that those seeking violent jihadist content online will respond to information on loneliness and unemployment.
What we're seeing online when it comes to the spread of disinformation online, it's directly responding to events that are taking place in an offline context. And we see this in Indonesia. We see this in the United States. Events offline will drive engagement with disinformation online. In almost any country that we engage with audiences who are at risk of engaging with violent extremist content, even disinformation content, we find that the most effective counter content is not necessarily content which immediately or directly tries to deconstruct the argument or give them counter facts. We tend to find that audiences are going to be more likely to engage with content that directly taps into the underlying drivers, so the underlying emotions that got them to this content in the first instance. So specifically, if we're talking about radicalization, in Indonesia, we did some work in 2020 where we were directly engaging with audiences in Indonesia that were engaging with Salafi jihadist content. We found, we tested both counter content that was directly engaging with the ideology, countering the argument, and we tested counter content that was offering support and that was engaging with their emotional state, so feelings of loneliness, or even engaging with some of the underlying drivers like their unemployment.
Ramalingam says the most successful counterterrorism efforts involve behavioral health methods that provide a way for people to leave violent extremism peacefully. And there are increasingly more of these efforts now taking place online. Still ahead on VOA Asia, bottleneck at the border. Happening now in Asia. Malaysia's government and business leaders say they're taking steps to stamp out forced labor amid a flurry of U.S. import bans over the rampant abuse of migrant workers making much of the world's rubber gloves and palm oil. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. New York State Governor Kathy Hochul lifting the state's indoor mask mandate, which marks a turning point in the way the state has responded to COVID-19.
We had a mask or vax requirement for businesses. It was an emergency temporary measure put in place literally 2 months ago. And at this time, we say that is the right decision to lift this mandate for indoor businesses and let counties, cities, and businesses to make their own decisions on what they want to do with respect to mask or the vaccination requirement. Given the declining cases, given declining hospitalizations, that is why we feel comfortable to lift this in effect tomorrow. We are still going to continue for now the requirement at state-regulated health care facilities. I think that's very obvious of why we want to make sure our health care facilities are safe. That would be adult care facilities, nursing homes, correctional facilities, schools and child care centers. But this fight is not over.
And CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says because it's not over, the CDC is not lifting its recommendation for indoor masking.
At this time, we continue to recommend masking in areas of high and substantial transmission. That's much of the country right now in public indoor settings. And so we're, of course, taking a close look at this in real time, and we're evaluating rates of transmission of as well as rates of severe outcomes as we look at updating and reviewing our guidance.
This comes after the governors of New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware, and Oregon announced on Monday that they plan to lift statewide mask requirements in schools a month or two from now. They cited the rapid easing of COVID-19's Omicron variant surge. California health officials also announced on Monday that the state will end its indoor masking requirement for vaccinated people next week, but that masks still are the rule for school children amid rapid falling coronavirus cases. Officials said that after February 15th, unvaccinated people still will be required to be masked indoors, and everyone, vaccinated or not, will have to wear masks in higher-risk areas like public transit and nursing homes. Meantime, in Canada, trucking protests over COVID-19 restrictions are causing concerns for Canadian lawmakers. The truckers are partially blocking the busiest crossing between the United States and Canada, the Ambassador Bridge near Detroit. No traffic from Canada has been able to move. The crossing carries 25% of all trade between the two nations. Bill Blair is the Minister of Emergency Preparedness.
As the Prime Minister said yesterday, this pandemic sucks. And it does for everyone. But at the same time, let us also acknowledge the remarkable sacrifice and resiliency and the work of our first responders, our healthcare professionals, people who have made this work. And I would also take the opportunity to acknowledge the truckers. You know, from the very outset of the pandemic, when we by necessity had to impose restrictions at our borders, we recognized the important work of the truckers in maintaining our supply chains. And they've done extraordinary work on behalf of all Canadians in making this work. The restrictions that have been imposed were necessary by the circumstances, but we share everyone's hope that as we emerge and as the science continues to evolve, that we will be able to return to a sense of normalcy. But unfortunately, the time is not yet there.
Protesters have said they will not leave until all vaccine mandates and COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. They also called for the removal of Justin Trudeau's government, though the administration is responsible for few of the restrictive measures, most of which were put in place by provincial governments. A New York husband and wife were arrested Tuesday and charged with conspiracy to launder 119,754 bitcoins stolen in 2016. Deputy U.S. Attorney General Lisa Monaco.
Today, the Department of Justice has dealt a major blow to cyber criminals looking to exploit cryptocurrency. The department has charged Ilya Lichtenstein and Heather Morgan for their alleged roles in a conspiracy to launder stolen cryptocurrency taken during the 2016 hack of a virtual currency exchange. That hack resulted in the theft of almost 120,000 Bitcoin, which at the time was worth approximately $71 million. Today, the value of that Bitcoin has grown to over $4.5 billion.
According to the Justice Department, conspiracy to commit money laundering carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison, and conspiracy to defraud the United States carries a maximum sentence of 5 years. Read and see more on these stories at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
Happening now in Asia, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has announced plans to extend COVID-19 restrictions in Tokyo and 12 other areas for 3 more weeks as cases of the Omicron variant remain high. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The Ukrainian military says the number of artillery attacks on the border between Ukraine and the Russia-occupied Donetsk and Luhansk regions have decreased, though Moscow continues to amass troops just inside its border. Reporter Victor Lamar traveled to the region and found people there are hoping for peace, but preparing for war. Anna Rice narrates his story.
In Zolotoye, a town in the Luhansk region of eastern Ukraine, Ukrainian soldiers are keeping watch in the area.
There are some shootings, so if I look into the loophole, I could get a bullet in my head.
Civilians live in this area as well, and gunfire is common. 70-year-old Alexandra Gerasimova says she's used to it, but the livestock are not.
Don't be afraid, Maruся. Don't fuss. No one will hurt you, no. Here, look, this got broken in 2017. We had no windows left. I had to put in new ones. These were broken too. Those as well. There was nothing here after a missile fell here.
Nikolai's yard was hit by a missile a few weeks ago. The resident of the Stanitsa Luhanska says there are also mines.
They're laying mines here. I keep finding ropes here. You know, the ones for mines. I don't know how they are used exactly.
The Ukrainian military says the self-proclaimed Luhansk People's Republic is deploying anti-personnel landmines, banned not just by the Minsk Agreement, but also by international conventions.
We have seen an anti-personnel landmine, POMZ-2, being deployed. It's used by Russia, and lots of them are being used by illegal militant groups. It's used not only against our military, but also against civilians.
Just a few weeks ago, this village of Novozvanivka in the Luhansk region was in the middle of attacks and gunfire. It's relatively quiet here now, but still the Ukrainian military have noticed some movement.
They're starting to move. We can see them walk around without fear, and these days I can even see them carry around ammunition.
According to Ukrainian intelligence, Russian troops are actively training, and they have set up artillery units near the border.
They have enhanced the artillery units' training at firing ranges located on the temporarily occupied territories.
The Ukrainian military says it won't be surprised if one day they see the cannons at firing ranges pointed at them. But they say they're not panicked and instead are prepared for what comes next. For Victor Limar in the Luhansk region, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia. The Wall Street Journal reports that pro-China accounts have been flooding Twitter with messages that include the hashtag genocide games and what researchers say is an effort to dilute the hashtag's power to galvanize criticism of the host nation. Human rights advocates have used the term to describe how authorities have conducted forcible assimilation efforts against Uyghur Muslims. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. A technology company is using artificial intelligence to detect forced labor and other risks in supply chains. Matt Dibble reports.
The world has become more familiar with the term supply chain, as weak links exposed by the pandemic have triggered global shortages of goods. The increased scrutiny poses an opportunity to delve deeper into the origin of those goods, says Justin Dillon.
Our need to understand how supply chains work is becoming a personal and a professional issue.
Dillon's focus on supply chains grew out of his human rights work, investigating the use of forced labor in manufacturing and food production. He founded the tech company Freedom to provide businesses with more transparency about the products they purchase.
We work with, you know, large companies, we work with governments, we work with universities. And what they'll do is they'll tell us what they buy. And all of that information comes into Freedom. We use AI and natural language processing to bring together an analysis for our customers to help them understand where their goods and services are coming from. In some cases, all the way down to the raw materials that go into the products that they use.
Freedom's analysis predicts the source of those raw materials and assigns a risk level rating to it based on human rights, workplace safety, environmental laws, and other factors derived from information Freedom deems credible. Freedom's focus on slave labor comes at a time when governments are passing modern slavery laws. There are an estimated 25 million forced laborers worldwide, according to a 2017 report by the International Labor Organization. Dillon hopes to produce a consumer version of Freedom as well.
And I'm actually quite hopeful that in a decade from now, we're going to be able to go to market and buy with our values, and it's just going to be normal.
New tools to help the world buy better. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
One of Australia's most recognizable animals, the koala, could be moving closer to extinction. That's according to new research released Tuesday by the Australian Conservation Foundation, a non-governmental organization. It has found their habitats have been severely affected by government-approved land clearing projects. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Koalas communicate using a range of noises. They have a large round head, big furry ears, and a black nose. They eat mostly leaves from eucalyptus trees. Research released Tuesday by the Australian Conservation Foundation has found that the amount of koala habitat bulldozed for mines and new housing estates has increased in Australia every year since 2012. Campaigners want the marsupial's conservation status to be changed from vulnerable to endangered in the states of Queensland and New South Wales. Disease and climate change, as well as bushfires, droughts and heat waves, continue to threaten koala populations. The federal government has promised a multi-million dollar plan to support strategic habitat restoration. A spokesperson said the scheme would focus on weed and pest control, revegetation and fire planning across thousands of hectares of significant koala areas. But Freya Cole, the media and investigations manager at the Australian Conservation Foundation, says more action is needed.
So many people travel across the world to Australia to see the koala. If this government wants to get real about protecting koala, it's not about restoration. That's only a small part of it. What this government needs to do is stop approving projects that are known to destroy koala habitat, and they need to do better on climate.
The koala was listed as a vulnerable species in parts of eastern Australia in 2012, while other populations in Victoria and South Australia are considered to be healthy. Koalas in the southern parts of Australia are bigger and have thicker fur than their northern relatives. This is thought to be a natural adaptation to keep them warm in the cooler winters in southern Australia. Scientists have estimated there are about 92,000 koalas across the country. A 2020 report by lawmakers in New South Wales warned koalas could be extinct in Australia's most populous state by 2050. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy your day.